So it is January 29th, 2014. This is Playing for Cheaps, episode 20. My name is Chris.
And this is Matt.
Matt, this is Chris.
Yep. Welcome.
You just want to get this over with so you can play Rust, don't you?
Welcome to the show, Chris.
It's a pleasure to be here, Matt. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Why, thank you, Chris. It's always been a lifelong dream of mine to be on your show.
Well, dream accomplished.
Excellent. Achievement unlocked.
Yeah. Oh, you've been playing too many video games. I'm thinking one in particular.
Dude. Rust.
Why don't you go first? What you've been playing?
I think I've solely been playing Rust. Outside of my standard, you know, making a few moves on Words with Friends and Hero Academy on my phone. But Rust, man, Rust is crazy. It's such a savage world. Okay.
Savage.
So I'll tell you a little bit about my Rust experience in the past week. Now that I'm, I think, 55 plus hours into it. So I don't know if I mentioned this last week or not, but my cousin, Chris, got this game. And of course one of his friends also got it. And they are both acquaintances with a guy who, because like most Steam games, multiplayer games, you can, you know, get on the official servers or you can host your own servers. Mm-hmm. Well, they know a guy who hosts his own server for several games, including Rust now. And so we ended up moving to his server a week or two ago, whenever it was. And we found out that there's a website for the map, so you can go, because there's no in-game map, but we found a website dedicated to the map. So with that, and with the kind of trick, more or less, to when you first start and you're loaded in with a rock, if you just go to the, you know, console or whatever and type in suicide, you can kill yourself and then respawn at another random point. And so basically what happened is when we started on this fresh server, we all did that until we all basically spawned to a point where we were close enough together to where we could find each other.
Okay.
So we did that, because otherwise, before we thought of doing that, we spent probably 4 days trying to find each other and never did. And so we all got together. And there's three of us. All right, cool. We started quickly gathering resources, supplies, and we kind of assigned each other jobs. I was the builder. Chris, my cousin Chris, was the weapons guy, and then his friend Josh was the collecting resource guy, and Chris also helped collect resources. But I basically stayed at camp, and as they brought me resources, of course it takes time to craft things, so while they're out gathering, I'm sitting at, you know, at camp crafting wood planks and making foundations and stuff. And I built us, over the course of 3 days, I built us a humongous fortress. It was, you know, to the clouds high, you know, it was as high as, you know, any mountain we could see within a mile's radius. It was crazy.
Okay.
And it was a glorious fortress, and we loved it, and it was fantastic, and we had storage boxes full and full of just crazy amounts of guns and items and things we'd collected or crafted. You know, we were gathering blueprints and learning how to make cool things.
I can't help but notice you're talking about this in the past tense.
Yes, I am. I'll get there. So, it's funny that you notice that. So, are you still with me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, my Skype made a beeping noise, and I didn't know what. Oh, I think somebody messaged me on Skype. Anyways, so I had this fortress, and we had just, you know, copious amounts of materials. And one day, another one of my cousin Chris's friends joined the game. Of course, we told him what server we were on. And he's kind of an odd fellow. I've never really liked him. I've met him a few times. I mean, I was just kind of okay with him, you know, but yeah. I never really, like, you know, I've met a few of my other cousin's friends that are really cool gamers, but this guy was just kind of, you know, different. I was like, okay, whatever. You know, the more the merrier in Rust, because if you have a lot of players, you can kind of more or less form a gang and you start raiding people. Okay, cool. Well, our persona in the game is, for the most part, trying to be friendly. And when we come across other people, as long as they're not threatening to us, you know, we would help them out or, you know, be friendly or, you know, work together, whatever.
Right.
Well, this kid joins us. And, of course, we give them all the codes to get into the doors because with the latest patch update, they added door sharing finally. So, which is basically a, whoever builds the door can assign it a 4-digit, like basically like a PIN number. And then whoever knows the PIN number can open the doors. Which is fine. Okay, cool. We give them the numbers. And of course we load them up. We give them like, you know, good weapons and good clothing, you know. At this point we were making Kevlar, which is pretty high up in the clothing thing.
Sure.
And this kid, like right away, like after we get him in, you know, that night or whatever, we tell him all the basics and how to play the game. The following day, while we're all at work, this kid's playing. Of course, he has access to all of our base, which is fine, but he goes out and starts, starting shit with other players in the world. You know, like, causing problems and giving us kind of, like, a bad rap, you know? And basically, everybody knows that he's rolling with us because he's coming out of our base. And so he encountered these people, and they got in kind of an argument. I don't know what was said or what was done or if people got shot or whatever. But basically, his retaliation to the argument or the confrontation was he went and built all these spiked wall barricades around their entire base and in front of their doors. So they couldn't, they couldn't exit their own base without dying. Of course this pissed them off. And of course, this prompted them to raid our base just to get to the little shit that did this to them. By the time, you know, my cousin Chris and I figured this out, we get off work and we log into the game. You know, the walls on our base level are missing to our base, you know, the ground level. And our base has been raided to a point, you know, you build, after so many floors, you build another door and a doorway. So, you know, if they get in, you put, you know, we end up putting our most valuable stuff in the very top floor. So it's quite a chore to get to, right?
Right.
So, of course, our ground level stuff was all raided and everything. And, you know, we're asking in the chat, because you can general chat with anybody in the server. And we're like, you know, asking what was up. Basically, we find out what happened. And so we worked out as a peace treaty. We waited until this kid logged back in. And as a peace treaty, we offered him up as kind of like a sacrifice. So we basically let him, let these guys come into our base and just shotgun this guy down and basically just derelict him. And so that was cool with them. And that was, as a part of the peace treaty, they wanted us to come and help break down all the barriers that he put up around their base, which we did. So we resumed the peace.
Okay.
Yeah. So that happened, and that was okay. Fast forward a couple more days, though, and there's a bigger, badder group of people that have been raiding the towns, and more or less, our base got compromised to the point where it was no longer safe. So we retreated to the mountains and the wastelands, which is far from any civilization, but it's full, like the wastelands are loaded full of resources, which is ironic that it's called the wastelands, I guess.
Probably zombies too, huh?
No, not zombies. We have to actually travel quite a ways to get some zombies, because the zombies carry the good loot, of course. But while I was at,
just like real life.
Yeah, exactly. While I was at work, Chris and Josh loaded up most of our supplies from our base before it got completely ransacked. But basically it's dead to us because all the walls and structures on the base level are gone and they can basically get into wherever because this group apparently has C4, enough C4 to, you know, to raid bases like that. So we've moved on and, yeah, basically we've regathered our sources and kind of reaccumulated everything to the point of a high power. And tonight I'm going to start assembly on base 2.0.
Cool.
Yeah.
I notice you're in-game right now on Skype.
Yeah, well, I'm loading it. I'm actually updating it on my PC because I usually play on Andrew's laptop.
Ah.
So it's
if you were curious,
right,
if you were curious, you are at 57 hours in Rust.
Dang.
And you've played for over 40 hours in the past 2 weeks. So basically, it's been a part-time job for you. I'm not trying to slut shame you or anything.
Here's the thing. I've been the past probably, you know, a couple years pretty disciplined with going to bed at a decent time. There's been nights where on a work day I'll go to bed 2 o'clock. One time I went to bed at 3 o'clock in the morning just because I couldn't I couldn't log out. I just couldn't do it. It was just, I had to build one more floor or one more staircase or, you know, get one more pile of wood or something.
How old are you?
28.
Okay. You don't sound sure. I'm not bringing that up to be like, oh, you're a kid who stays up late, but it changes once you hit 30. It really does.
Yeah.
Because it's like, if I could still do that, I would, but it's like physically impossible. It used to be, you know, Saturdays, for instance, I'd stay up till 3 a.m. playing games, surfing the net, that type of thing. Uh-huh. The last couple of years, that 3 a.m. has become midnight. Anything past that, it's like, I can't even keep my eyes open.
It's an incredible game for what it is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's still an alpha, of course, but I can't wait to see what they do with it.
That's great. And so that's basically been it for you?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, you haven't even had a chance to break into the Hearthstone open beta?
No, I need to do that. I really need to
Hearthstone running in a side window. It's like my character in Rust is playing Hearthstone. You guys have to protect me.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I played a few games.
How quick are the matches in Hearthstone?
They're a little bit quicker than a Magic the Gathering match. Uh-huh. For the one reason that there's only one round, for starters. And second, because the mana works differently. Hmm. You don't draw land. You don't draw land to play for mana. You're just given an extra mana each turn. So turn one, you have one. Turn two, you have two. That type of thing.
I'm thinking, because some of the bigger, not necessarily bigger, but I guess more powerful items and or bigger pieces of your base can take sometimes several minutes to craft, and I could easily just like tab out and do a quick game of Hearthstone or something.
Let's see how deep this rabbit hole goes, man. Then while you're waiting to find a Hearthstone match, you're playing solitaire.
Oh man, that's fun.
Alright.
So what have you been playing?
Well, a few games, obviously a little bit of Hearthstone.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. I'm kind of working on like a definitive, not review because it's a beta, but just kind of like collecting my definitive thoughts on it before I really want to talk about it. Also because I want to make sure I'm not, my entire conversation isn't just comparing it to Magic Online, but just comparing it on its own merits as well. So just trying to really take a measured approach to that. So I've been playing some of that. Played some more Nidhogg. Like I told you, and I want to bring up on the show, my daughter Joelle is a massive shit talker.
Yeah.
When I play Nidhogg against her, it's pretty amazing. So, she works the controller and I work the keyboard. And when I first started playing with her, first few matches, I was like, okay, you know, Joelle, these are how you play. I'm going to go kind of easy on her. And so I went kind of easy on her and she started to get the hang of it. She started to get a little bit better. And so I was gradually, you know, getting to the point where I was having to actually play it for realsies to keep up with her.
Uh-huh.
And so we'll be playing it for realsies, and she'll just do a move on me and just take me out. She's like, oh, he's like, you don't need to take it easy on me anymore, Dad. And I'm like, I'm not taking it easy on you anymore. She's like, well, you could have fooled me. I'm like, what? Who are you?
Dang.
She's 8, by the way, in case anyone was curious. And it's just like, you know, I'll do something like I'll lift the sword up to throw it and then, you know, quick move it down to strike and she'll parry it. She'll be like, oh, you must think I'm pretty stupid to think I'd fall for that. I'm like, what are you talking? You know, first of all, we don't talk like that. You know, obviously she's getting some of it from school. But she just listens to me play a lot, I think is what it is. And I don't swear a lot and I don't yell or throw the controller or anything, but I can get frustrated my own way. I can't remember if we talked about it on the show or not, where she was playing, I think she was playing Super Meat Boy on the 360, and every time she was dying, she'd be like, what? What is...
Yeah, you know, yeah.
How did, what? And I'm like, where did she pick that up? And my wife's like, that's what you do. So she's got a little bit of that in her.
Nice.
I think. So, but it was just really funny to see her just smack talking me. And I'm just like acting like, it's like, okay, this is what it felt like when my dad was trying to play a game with me and he wasn't keeping pace and she's just running circles around me. So it was pretty funny. It's pretty funny to see.
Yeah.
I also played this game. It was on sale in Steam called Retro City Rampage. It's been out for about a year now. And it's basically the original Grand Theft Auto was a top-down game.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like an homage to that and then an homage to a bunch of like 8-bit video game type things. And it's not really mind-blowing. It's not really something that, you know, was just like, oh, I need to spread the word about this game. But it's been interesting, so I've just kind of been kind of plinking away at it. So once I've played it some more, I'll have a little bit more to offer on that, I think. But the big thing is that I've been playing NCAA Football 2014.
Mm.
Like, a lot.
Nice.
And almost as much to my surprise as anyone's, I want to say. So Xbox Live had a sale over the holidays, and you could pick up the NCAA Football 2014 for $15. So I took the plunge and picked it up and deleted most of the shit off of my hard drive because I got one of the original hard drives and put that on there. And, you know, I've played Madden games with friends before through the years, and I think I owned one. I think I owned Madden 64 back in the day. Maybe my brother did. I can't remember exactly. Mm-hmm. But, and the engines are very similar between NCAA and Madden, so that's why I'm making the comparison. And so I kind of know the basics, but I've never really gotten into it before. Especially when you pick your defensive plays, I was always just kind of like, yeah, that one looks good, I'll go for it. Yeah, that one looks good, I'll play it. Uh-huh. And then sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But, so I played a couple of exhibition matches, just like, okay, this team versus this team, just to get the hang of it. And then I noticed it had this mode called Dynasty Mode. And I was like, this is interesting. What's this? And so I went into it, and basically it puts you in the role of head coach for the team. And this is where the game really opened up and kind of took on a life of its own for me. Because it started introducing role-playing mechanics into this game, I kid you not. Like, your coach levels up. Your defensive coordinator and your offensive coordinator level up.
Huh.
And depending on how your players perform and certain things that you have them do in games, they can rank up as well, in addition to training and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been playing this game so much over these past couple of weeks, this past week especially, and my wife is like, you know, what is it about this that's so interesting to you? Especially because it's college. I mean, I'll watch some NFL. I don't watch a whole lot of college football just because Saturdays are usually busy and I've never gotten into it. But even watching football, not being in it very deep, but just kind of watching it as a spectator, there's a lot of strategy that goes into it. Because, and of course, I mean American football.
Right.
In case anyone was confused about that. Because the coaches are picking these plays every single play. What's the offense going to run? And the defense is trying to predict what the offense is going to run. And the offense is trying to predict what the defense is predicting they're going to run. So there's actually a lot of real strategy. And in some ways, it's kind of like a game of chess, trying to predict what your opponent's going to do and reacting accordingly to that. And it's a really fascinating way of looking at the game. And so in Dynasty Mode, you pick a team, and I picked Notre Dame because they're Catholic. You know, that was literally the only reason behind why I picked it, because it's Catholic college and I'm Catholic. And so you literally go through this entire season. And so I'm playing these games each week, and when the game's going on, you would play it like any other football game. You're in control of the quarterback. When it's the defense, you're in control of the defense. If the ball gets thrown to someone, it hands control over to that avatar, and then you're playing that guy. Pretty standard stuff. But what's really interesting is between the games, you're actually looking at all this training stuff. You're looking at how your coaches, your head coach, your OC, and your DC are leveling up. And you're looking at how your players are leveling up. And what makes it so interesting is because these are college students, as this season's going on, they're getting offers to join, to go to other schools. They're getting offers to join the draft. So it's like you might have this, for instance, what I dealt with, I played through a whole season, and I'm on my second season now. My star quarterback was asked, what was like, well, you know, I'm a sophomore. I'm going to be a junior next year. I think I'm going to go into the draft. And so I had to promise him certain things, playing time. We'd do more passing plays instead of running plays. We would have this many wins this next year. And to get him to commit to stay with us for one more year as opposed to going into the draft, and he agreed to do it. And, you know, I'll have to go through that again this year. So it's I'm managing all these guys. I'm trying to figure out, you know, how to keep them happy. My star running back, you know, if I do a lot of passing, he's not happy because he's not getting the ball. But if I do a lot of run plays, my quarterback isn't happy because he's not the superstar throwing these huge bombs every play.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to juggle all this stuff, and I have to juggle the fact that these guys are, every year their stats are going to get a little bit different. You know, some of them will improve, some of them may get a little bit worse because, you know, they're in their first couple of years of college at this point. And so my star quarterback, who was a sophomore, is now a junior, and I had convinced him to stay. But at the end of this year, what's it going to take to convince him to stay? Versus, do I split his play time with my backup quarterback, who's a freshman, who I'm going to have for another 3 years, potentially, versus my other quarterback, who's a senior, who's telling me, coach, I want more playing time because I'm trying to go into the draft myself. And, you know, this is my last year of college for people to notice me. So there's all this really interesting stuff that I never really realized I'd be having to deal with. And I just find it utterly fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like my star running back from last year. I mean, the dude was a tank. You couldn't take him down. So we were primarily a running game. And now he's a senior this year, and we actually just make him play special teams only now because he doesn't want to get hurt. So I've got this sophomore running back who, because he's a sophomore and because I didn't play him a lot the year before, he's not nearly as good. But if I want to make him good, I need to play him more. But playing him more is a bigger risk, coupled with the fact that I promised my quarterback he'd get more throwing plays in. So there's all this just really fascinating stuff I have to juggle. And just the depth and the level of it. And on top of all of that, I'm looking at high schools and I'm offering scholarships to kids to graduate high school and come play for us. And I'm having to compete with other colleges. I'm having to schedule visits. You know, come see us when we play this team. Come see us when we play that team. And, you know, I'm paying resources to scout these guys. And if you scout them, sometimes their stats go up, sometimes their stats go down. But it's not just a simple press A to hike the ball, press one of the buttons to throw it to a guy. There's all this stuff that's going on behind the scenes that takes up as much playing time as actually playing the game does. And it's just been really fun, like really engrossing to me in a way I wasn't expecting it
to
be.
So when you play this mode, is it strictly doing stuff like that, or do you play the football games, or do they simulate themselves, or...
You can have it simulate if you want. You can have it simulate only the defense if you like playing offense, or, you know, vice versa. Or you can play the whole game. And I actually play the whole game. So not only is that going on, but, you know, and if there's like a week where it's like I don't really feel like playing a game, but I've done all I can, I can just have it advance and autoplay that week, and then it'll go to the next week. And your stats are, I mean, because it's the start of my second year, we actually got to do stuff like pick our season, like who we're going to play over the course of the year, because there's so many college teams and there's only 15 weeks in the year. And you have to have 3 bye weeks. So it's like, when do I schedule my bye weeks? Who do I play? Do I play these really good teams? It's going to be a lot harder on us, but if we win, our ranking goes up, or do I try and do a mix? You know, all this stuff just affects it. And then to take it even further, this college is actually looking at your record and what you're doing as a coach, and they can fire you. Huh. So it's just the amount of juggling you have to do is just something that is really reminding me more of a strategy game. And there's stuff like you find because it's college, it can't use real players like it can for the NFL, so it auto-generates people. So there's that little bit of XCOM feeling that I get in it too, where I'm actually rooting for these guys and I don't want them to get hurt. And I'm wanting this guy that I made these promises to succeed. So there's a little bit of that investment that's going on with my players too, which I thought was pretty neat. And then what's really funny is because it's randomly generated, for instance, my quarterback, whose name is like, I think it's Talik something. I can't remember his last name off the top of my head. It's like Talik Muffin or something. It's this really interesting name. And he's white with blonde hair.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just randomly generates all that stuff. But, you know, it's really cool. And, you know, on top of all of this stuff, you know, I'm playing a game. The game's going great. And then it's just like, man, this guy's a star player. That's really awesome that he's on my team, but I'm only going to have him for another year. In the back of my head, I'm in a bidding war with three other colleges for his replacement. You know, trying to find, you know, I've got four seniors on my team this year. Two of them are defensive ends, one's a quarterback, and one's a running back or whatever. So I need to find replacements for these guys, but their rankings are so high, I know I can win a game if I play them. But I need to play the guy that's a freshman because he's going to be my go-to if I don't get these other guys I'm bidding for. So there's just a lot of really having to play off all the things that are going on in there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
I hope that's not boring conversation, but I was just really amazed at how invested it made me feel. And I don't know that it would do that with NFL. Maybe it would if there was a similar mode. I haven't played Madden 25, but I was just really impressed by it. And what's really cool is at the end of the season, I ended up letting a guy go to the draft. And it was like, so-and-so went to the draft. Do you want to export him to your Madden 25 roster? So you can actually take these guys through, and then you can import them into your Madden football game. And then have them go into the draft in that, and then they could end up on a team.
That's really cool.
So there's a lot of really integrated stuff in there that I thought was pretty cool. It's really surprisingly sophisticated. So, and I mean, there's thousands of high school kids that are trying to get in every year, and our school is allowed 35 scholarships. Who do I give these scholarships to? And my head coach, he got another skill point. I can make it so every time we take a timeout, we get, you know, all of my stats go back to normal. So players that were, you know, playing poorly go back up to normal, and players that are playing really aggressively come back, so everything kind of levels out again. I could up that, or I could make it so when I offer someone a scholarship, there's a 10% chance they'll just automatically commit to my team. So there's all these different ways of approaching it. You know, I can make my guys play really, really well defensively. I can make them be aggressive, but that will also reduce that penalty, the lack of penalty stat that I increased. Or I can let the lack of penalty stat increase even more, but my guys won't play as aggressive. So just all these really different little things that you can tweak to try and make it your own team. And then at the end of the season, I can take my coach and I can say, you know what, I'm going to look at other schools and I can get job offers from other colleges for me to be a coach for them. And then I would just take all my stats over to a new college and start it over again.
Huh.
So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is awesome. It's very, very RPG-ish.
Yeah, surprisingly so. Speaking of RPG-ish, I've actually been spending some time on YouTube watching Dark Souls playthroughs.
Oh, no.
And I was really tempted to put that back in the 360 and play it again, but I stopped myself. Because I don't know if I could handle that kind of punishment right now. But it has made me almost want to pre-order Dark Souls 2. Used to be a glutton for punishment.
You are.
Yeah. Something about those games, man. They're not even I don't even think they're necessarily for me, but there's just something about them that I just want to be in them and experience them. And it's like, I can watch walkthroughs of that type of stuff all day if you gave me the chance. So, but that's been about it for me. So, looks like you wanted to ask me about Slender.
Yeah, have you heard of this game?
Yes.
My coworker was telling me about it today. I guess he was up late, caught a repeat episode of Conan O'Brien. And on the on Conan, they do like a Clueless Gamer bit every once in a while. And of course, because I think this game is a couple years old now. But yeah, they did a Clueless Gamer bit where Conan was playing this game, and he said that it just looked and sounded horrifying.
Yeah, are you familiar with Slender Man at all?
Like the myth of the mythology?
Yeah, the internet, just, something
rotten
thing.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So yeah, it's basically based off of that, and they released a game 2 or 3 years ago, and then they gave it like basically some extra polish, and I think they reissued it as like Slender the Arrival or something. I've got Steam open right now, I can look. Let's see here. Slender. Yeah, Slender the Arrival is $10 on Steam. And so if memory serves correctly, you basically start in the forest and you have to collect, I think it's 8 letters, something of that nature. And basically you're kind of being hunted by Slender Man. And it's one of those things where if you see him, you have to look away from him and run away as fast as you can. And the longer you're in the game and the more letters you collect, the more often he pops up.
Oh my gosh.
And basically, if you stare at him for long enough, or if he manages to catch you, that type of thing, you basically die of a heart attack. And if you see him, like, the whole screen kind of does, like, that artifacting and goes nuts, and you know, like, static and stuff like that. So it's pretty intense.
Yeah, the way my coworker and now you were describing it, it's just, yeah, I was like, I don't know if I could handle that.
I know I couldn't.
Anyway, I was curious if you'd heard of it.
Yeah, I mean, for $10, if you're into that type of thing, from everything I've heard about it, people say it's a pretty good game. And I think the price is right. I just know for me, it would be one of those things that stresses me out too much. So. You want to get angry?
Don't want to get angry?
Talk about your next thing you wrote down on here.
Oh. Actually, I wasn't too angry about it, to be honest.
Okay.
Really quick, though, I did want to touch back on your daughter shit-talking you on Nidhogg. I was going to say earlier, you could always pull the parent card and just be like, you know what, go to bed, or go to your room. Like when she's kicking your ass shit-talking. Joelle, go to your room.
She went from, you know, never winning to winning once. And then she won once, and it was just like, oh, it's on now. She's laughing at me, and she's, you know, going, I can't believe you fell for that type of stuff when she kills me. And that was pretty much like, you know, it's anyone's game at this point, which is pretty cool to see. And she was actually bugging me tonight. She's like, Dad, are we going to play it tonight? I said, you know, nope, not tonight. So.
Okay, so, yeah, my Kinect for my Xbox One took a shit on me.
Yeah, you were mentioning this.
I don't know, when did I text you about it? Like 5 days ago or so? Three or four days? I don't know. It hasn't been very long.
No, it was something I said, hey, we can bring it up on the show tonight, so it was only a few days ago.
So, yeah, it was sometime, what day is it, Wednesday? It must have been, you know, Thursday or Friday maybe. You know, typical get home from work. And, of course, I have, you know, my Xbox One hooked up to my cable box, so it has to be on to watch TV now. And, yeah, it's now a standard thing when I, you know, when I get home and I'm getting settled in and I want to just kind of plop on the couch and take a chill or relax or whatever, I'm like, Xbox on. And it didn't hear me. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's going to be one of those times where it's, you know, like I was saying on the show, it's like the one command that I have trouble with. So I'm like, Xbox on, you know, saying it really slow, pausing. Still didn't work. So I was like, okay. I tried several more times. I don't want to, you know, just do them all on the show, but I tried several times. I was like, all right, fine. Well, I do know that once in a while when the Xbox does a huge update, and because essentially when you tell it to turn off, it goes more into a standby mode. And sometimes when it does a huge update in the background when it's in standby, it can restart the console and then it won't turn on by voice command. And so I thought that's just what it was. I'm like, okay, whatever, I've done this before. So I turned it on and I'm sitting there just like I always do, and it's not auto logging me in. And I'm like, okay, that's weird. And so I power it back off, and then I'm like, Xbox on. And it's still not doing it. I'm like, okay. So I turn it back on, and it's still not logging me in. It's not, you know, it's got the generic dashboard instead of my custom dashboard. And I'm looking, and I'm, you know, I'm fiddling around. I don't know if you've logged in manually before, but you can go up to the very top and, like, log into your profile manually.
Yeah, I've got a loud home, so I tend to do that quite frequently.
But while I was up there looking at the top of the menu doing that, I noticed in the far right corner, it said Kinect Unplugged, and it had like a little Kinect logo with like a, you know, a line through it. I'm like, okay. And so I went and like jiggled the cord in the back, and I, you know, I unplugged it and plugged it back in, and still nothing. And I was like, uh-oh. And so I took to Twitter and I tweeted the you know, Xbox support guy, and he texted me this link that he sent me that there's all these troubleshooting tips, and it was basically a list of shit that I was already doing. You know, unplug it, plug it back in, restart your console, wait X amount of seconds, do, you know, but make sure you do it in this certain order of operations. And so I text him back about 15 minutes later. I'm like, look, I did all this stuff. None of it's helping. So then he goes, yeah. And he sent me another link that was basically to request a replacement Kinect. I'm like, oh, okay. I'm like, that makes sense. And so during your order for a replacement Kinect, of course, you can do the standard, which is you send, they'll send you a box, you send yours back, and then upon arrival of yours, then they will send you a brand new one. Or you could do the expedited one where you have to give them your debit or credit card number or whatever, so that basically they can basically put a hold on your account for like $150. But then they will ship it. They'll ship it to you like ASAP, and then you send yours back. And so that's what I did. So they haven't charged me anything. It basically says they'll only charge you if you, you know, don't return your broken one, or if you go with, you know, outside the window of the return, or, you know, if it shows up and it wasn't exactly, you know, wasn't broken or something. And so, you know, what I say, this was Thursday or Friday. Yesterday, my replacement already came.
Wow. Any issues getting it up and running?
Actually, no, my replacement came this morning. But either way, yeah, I plugged it. I opened it up. You know, it had some instructions about, you know, how to repack your broken one. And it had a prepaid FedEx label to send back. And yeah, I basically unplugged mine and plugged in the replacement. Didn't have to recalibrate anything. The second I plugged it in, I just said Xbox on, and it heard me the first time and powered on like it was never gone.
Very nice. They learned some lessons from the 360s.
I think so.
And the thing I really like about that, because did you ever have to turn in a 360 for a repair?
Yeah, twice.
Yeah, I did too. Even though my 360 was broken, and even though I wasn't playing it, I didn't like boxing it up and shipping it off and not having it. So the fact that they send you one and then you send the dead one back, I like that a lot more. So that's pretty
cool. Luckily, you know, it's early enough in the cycle where I don't have, you know, a whole lot to play on my Xbox One, and Rust has got me pretty occupied that I didn't notice, you know, it wasn't a huge deal other than, you know, my wife had to turn it on manually to watch TV or whatever. And we'd both gotten used to kind of using the voice commands to change channels and stuff, basically to become ultra lazy.
Oliver's still S-Boss every time someone else says it. So that's
awesome.
Just to go back again really quick myself, on Amazon, you can pick up NCAA Football 2014 for $37 on the 360. or for $42 on Amazon on the PS3. And at GameStop, it looks like you can get it pre-owned for $49. So actually, that was a screaming deal that they were offering when I got it for $15. But even knowing what I paid, I would, you know, I'd probably wait till it dropped a little bit more, but that $35-$40 price range, totally worth it. So if it's something that you as a listener are interested in jumping into, something you're always kind of interested in doing, it's, you know, I've really enjoyed it. And while I am a football watcher, I'm not by any means a diehard fan, and certainly not of college. So just wanted to bring that up. And then also, it looks like your Kinect is unplugged issue is not something that you're experiencing in isolation.
Oh, really? I actually meant to research that a little bit, but I hadn't had the time.
Most of the stuff I'm seeing is from the release day. Let me see. Yeah. So it seems like you were actually kind of, what's interesting about yours is that it happened so much later than when it was happening to other people.
A lot of people had them bricked out of the box or something.
Yeah, well, from what most people were saying before, and I don't know if Xbox told you what the problem was that had that happen.
No, they didn't.
But a lot of people were assuming it's like, oh, I plugged my Xbox One in and did the update, and then I plugged my Kinect in and it didn't work. So they were wondering if the update was what did it. But I don't see any actual official announcement. But between that and Sony doing the stuff with their PS4s that were making that weird noise and stuff, it's nice to see that at least both companies are on the ball about getting it fixed. Yep. So that's cool. Want to move on to some news?
Yeah, I think we have quite a bit of news.
Want to move on to a lot of news?
Yeah.
John brought to our attention last week, the most recent issue of Game Informer has an article about the death and demise of LucasArts, which is really a fascinating thing to read. In essence, it talks about getting acquired by Disney. Well, it talks about, of course, their formation, their founding, their pedigree in adventure games, and then kind of their slow and steady downfall, which wrapped up with 1313 getting canceled, well, kind of put on an indefinite hiatus, Disney buying them out and closing the studios, with the last game they ever released being Star Wars Kinect, which is a terrible one to
Yikes,
go out on.
Really.
But what was really interesting is the stuff they were talking about 1313, which was one of the very first next-gen, well, current-gen now, games we ever saw. And it looked gorgeous, and it looked awesome. And there was a lot of speculation about, well, is it Boba Fett? You know, is it not Boba Fett? And, you know, the story's always kind of flip-flopped, and I chalked it up to, you know, internet rumor being what it is. But you come to find out that George Lucas was talking to them about this game, and then I guess 2 weeks before they were supposed to present, he said, you know, I changed my mind. It should be Boba Fett. So even in the LucasArts video game wing, he was busy destroying his creations.
Wow.
It wasn't just limited only to the movies.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. I also uncovered, I'll put the link to this in the show notes, courtesy of Polygon.com, there's an interesting opinion article about early access games. Basically, what it means to be early access and whether Rust is a good example of this, as is Starbound, but you know, Rust is obviously something we've talked about a lot more. Rust is in early access, and there's a lot of, not promises, but there's a lot of, you know, warnings from the developer. Hey, this stuff is subject to change. This might be different in the final build. But when there's already that many people playing it, is it really necessary to be saying that? Or should you just say, well, you know what? You know, for all intents and purposes, this is a complete game if people are playing the experience and enjoying the experience. So, basically, you know, it talks about, you know, having to differentiate between what's considered early access and what's considered quote unquote unfinished. So like I said, I'll post a link in the show notes, but it's a pretty cool read. I mean, from your opinion, obviously Rust has some stuff that's missing out of it.
Right.
But is it really to the point where it's like, how many people were we saying were playing it last week? How many millions?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't remember.
It was quite a few millions. But if quite a few millions of people are playing this game right now and experiencing it, maybe the solution isn't saying we're early access. Maybe the solution is saying, nope, it's done. We're going to patch it from here on out and fix all that stuff with patching versus moving it into beta or whatever it is versus moving it to full release. So kind of like talking about the implications of that and how different that is for, you know, sites and magazines that review video games.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the main site I go to, Giant Bomb, they actually were talking about that. I mean, it's like, you know, do we review these games now when they're so subject to change? When the fact of the matter is, how many people will still be playing it? But if it's still a year out from being considered done and ready for release, is there still going to be the popularity for it at that point? That type of thing.
Just to touch back on what I think I mentioned it last week, but the fact that they've already reached 40% of the sales in the first month that Rust has been released, then Gary's Mod did in its entire lifespan is astonishing. And yeah, like, this many people are logging in every day playing that game. And to me, I mean, it feels like a complete enough game. I mean, it's a little rough around the edges for sure, but like you said, it seems like for the $20 entry fee that I paid, it seems like, you know, players would be just fine and happy just playing it from here on out. And yeah, like you said, just having them patch things as they get it done or touch up, you know, all the little details.
By far the longest early access game I've ever played, has been Starbound. Uh-huh. And so, you know, they've obviously done a couple of huge patches that have caused characters to be wiped. And okay, I understand that. I knew that going into it because it was an early access game. But if that developer were to come out and say, hey, you know, we've got so many people playing this game now, all of the press for it and all of what you people have been telling us has been so overwhelmingly positive, we're going to say, you know what, all these plans that we had, those can be patches later, but for all intents and purposes, this is no longer an early access game. This is the finished product. I think if I knew that going in, I would be satisfied. And that's just my own personal opinion. But I don't go into an early access game for the anticipation of what it's going to be that might be dramatically different. I go into it based off of what I see the experience to be at the time I buy in. So, you know, if it eventually ends up being some sort of, you know, like you boot up Rust one day and it's like, hey, we're finished, and it's a Bejeweled clone.
Yeah. I'd be like, well, I'm done with this game. That was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, I mean, the developer still got the money that they were using to finish the product, and you're still getting the return of enjoyment on your purchase of it. It's an interesting new dichotomy and new, basically a whole new category of game that people are just now starting to understand. I mean, back when it was Minecraft was the one that pioneered it, and it was a one-off, but now when so many companies are doing it and so many independents and indie games are doing it, it just kind of makes you wonder if it needs to be a different type of classification. So, but it's a really fascinating article, and it's not huge.
Yeah, I'm gonna check it out.
If you got 10-15 minutes, you can check it out, give it a read. So why don't you hit this next couple?
So yeah, Microsoft purchased the IP rights to the Gears of War franchise, which to me personally didn't seem like a very huge surprise. I mean, when you have, you know, Cliff Bleszinski leave Epic. And in my opinion, they've already kind of drove Gears of War into the ground anyways. You know, I mean, it just seems like, to me, it seems like Microsoft's almost late to doing this.
Yeah, that was my biggest surprise was, oh, they had
already? Yeah, exactly. So, who knows?
Because I guess they announced a new
one. Right.
So
there's that.
Whoopee. I should get around to playing 3.
But the bigger news of tonight, especially because this is, like, fresh, because this just happened, Nintendo held a conference for its shareholders tonight, and basically it was, because it's no secret, Nintendo is bleeding money, and the Wii U is, you know, failing miserably in terms of sales and the shareholders' eyes, mainly. But, they basically had to have a conference about, you know, discuss their future and how they're going to kind of rebound from this. One of the first things he wanted to start out with was Mario Kart 8 releases this May. So that's kind of huge. Obviously, Mario Kart's always a huge seller for Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
So that's nice. We finally got kind of a more pinned down release date. They also said, now I don't know in what order, you know, he said these things, the CEO, but I just typed them up as I remembered them. Nintendo will begin to license some of its less popular characters to select partners, which a lot of people automatically speculated maybe perhaps finally mobile gaming. So I don't know. Obviously that last bit was speculation, but
that's a weird speculation.
Yeah.
Given the powerhouse that is still their handhelds. Right. I mean, are they going to be, you know, cutting off one hand to appease the other if they do something
they keep,
like that?
They're very careful when they're approached about this. They're very careful with their words. They keep dropping weird little hints like it's a possibility, but they keep also, like, repeating that their handheld and mobile devices would, I don't know how you said it, basically kind of coincide or work hand in hand rather than compete against each other. So I'm not sure if they have something in mind in particular or how that's going to work out.
So you got you're playing Mario on the Wii U and you've got Mario on the screen, and on your Wii U gamepad thing is the map. And then on your knee, you're resting your iPhone, and that's what you tap to activate your special powers.
Yikes. Oh, that gave me a headache.
Yeah, exactly.
They also announced that original DS games will be coming to the Wii U Virtual Console.
Already?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And here's the big kind of shocker for me is that, because Nintendo isn't one to acknowledge their mistakes, really. I mean, everybody will always talk about them, but they usually never openly admit them. But Iwata acknowledged that the gamepad is one of the major weaknesses for the Wii U, stating that consumers get confused into thinking that it's just an accessory for the Wii. And that their name branding basically hosed them.
Huh. I found an article from The Escapist that was published on January 23rd. Mm-hmm. That says, according to EA source says, Nintendo was dead to us after the Wii U launch. Now, Peter Moore of EA is coming out to say that the anonymous source is incorrect. But according to reports, AAA developers are not going to be coming back to the Wii U.
Ouch.
Which, if that's true, which we've already seen in some degree, we're looking at the very best, the Wii U being a GameCube situation.
Yeah. So, how long did the GameCube last?
It lasted. It was. It's kept its course with the PS2 and the original Xbox, I thought.
I feel like Nintendo might have to just. I don't know. I mean, it's to me. Obviously, I'm not a CEO of a multi-billion-dollar company, but.
Well, you could have fooled
me. But to
me,
it seems like it's almost time for them to cut their losses and start over. You know, if they're refusing to pull out of the console business, the Wii U is basically, from a business standpoint, an utter failure.
Yeah. I mean, what do you do? Do you stick with it through the life of this through this console generation, trying to be the first ones out of the gate again? Or do you let the other ones go through their revisions and see what you can crank out of the hardware, and then you kind of learn from the other two consoles' mistakes and just try to make a system that actually is on par or surpasses the next generation?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Totally.
And then how much money do you bleed in the meantime? Because, I mean, that's bad business 101, saying that, throwing good money after bad, throwing your 3DS money after your Wii U, mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, it's just, I say this stuff not trying to sound jaded. Because I don't feel like I'm jaded. I just feel like Nintendo lost me right around the time the Wii came out. And, part of that was me being resistant to a new control scheme like that, not wanting what they were offering. And so, it's just, I don't want to see a company like that fail, especially a company that I do, despite all my negative talking about them, they do hold a special place in my heart, Nintendo being the first console I own. But what do? You drop the consoles and go strictly handheld? Do you do one of the two things that I talked about beforehand? I mean, I don't know and obviously I'm not educated in what the ways out would be, but I don't see a way out.
He also followed that up by acknowledging that. He also followed that up by saying their developers need to focus more on developing games that utilize that gamepad in ways that make it worth the reason why they designed it in the first place, to be the major peripheral or controller that it is for the new console.
Well, yeah, especially if it's true that, AAA developers are off the wagon. Because with the AAA developers, it was like, yeah, we're going to release Assassin's Creed on, every single console known to man that anyone can own right now, and for the Wii U version it's just going to have a map. I get that because it's a AAA developer, but if they're looking at some of their first party developers or the other parties that stuck mm-hmm. with them, and those people are like, oh, it's just a map, it's like, well, if you have exclusive rights to Bayonetta 2 and all that second screen is just extra buttons to activate special moves, you kind of lost the plot
right
there. So.
Yeah.
I mean, say what you will about the Legend of Zelda previews where they were saying you would hold the gamepad up to the screen and it would be like holding up a shield. Say what you want about that being a gimmick or not. At least you were trying to do something different mm-hmm. with it. So.
Yeah, and I haven't, I don't own a Wii U, but I haven't seen any huge titles come out that have utilized that gamepad to where it's worthwhile. I mean, typically the games that come out, first party or third party, the gamepad is usually an optional thing. Like, you can just pick up a pro controller and just play it just like any other video game.
Right, exactly. And the idea that you can use the gamepad by itself, to play the games
right
on your own. Okay, that's a novel concept if you're 10 or 11 and mom and dad are watching TV and you want to play Wii
right
U. But mom and dad are they necessarily going to be the ones that, when I was a kid, you got one game every 3 months? That's not going to solve that problem either. It needs to be something that the people like us, I don't need to pick up a gamepad to look at a screen to play a game. You know, I bought the TV. Right. I'll tell the kids to go play if I really want to play a right. video game. That type of thing. So I don't know what the solution is to that, but it's a very interesting problem to have.
And here's the crazy thing is Iwata isn't going to step down. He's already said that. He announced at this conference tonight that he'll take a 40% pay cut for the next 4 or 6 months or something like that to kind of help recoup some of the losses. But also an interesting little blurb that I read on the business side of things, because I think this was on like the Wall Street Journal's website. Nintendo actually has quite a bit of money in the bank. Like, just raw, hard cash. Not just... It doesn't just rely on its shareholders. It basically utilizes its shareholders' money for research and development and for, you know, fronting the money to come out with this stuff. But if they really needed to, they've got something like $15 to $20 billion in the bank. And so they're not necessarily hurting. As surprising as that sounds.
Yeah, again, though, is that throwing good money after bad?
Right, right.
Huh.
I don't know. It's just... As an older gamer, the missteps... I don't even know if I want to call them mistakes, because the Wii wasn't... You know, financially, it wasn't a mistake. I mean, it was a huge success, but... As a gamer, as an older gamer, the missteps that Nintendo has been making these last few years... just to me, just keeps driving them further and further away from me.
Yeah, and you want them to be better, and you want to.
Oh, I really do.
But then you hear about them releasing DS games on the Wii marketplace, mm-hmm. and it's just like you've gone from trying to sell me back in my childhood with another Legend of Zelda to just straight up going, "Yeah, we released this game 4 years ago. We're going to sell it to you again." That doesn't make me happy. So, I mean, sure, there's a niche market for that, people who don't own a handheld that have always wanted to play that game, that type of thing. Sure. But I can't get beyond that feeling of bias toward it, just being like, you're just trying to milk this DS game again for all it's worth. So, enough Wii talk.
Yeah.
Xbox One to receive its first major dashboard update in March. Will fix the chat party system? Yes. And make friend interactions more easily available like they were on the 360.
Yes, excellent. Excited for that.
Also expected to boost the performance of the GPU. Great as well. The social interaction stuff that they're trying to fix is going to, you know, getting it closer to the 360 experience. Even if it's different, but it's feels
just
similar.
Just make it easy, you know? It's so complex and buried in menus that it's just clunky.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was... When I read that today, I was really excited for that.
Speaking of which, hi to all my new friends I got over the past couple of weeks on my Xbox Live account.
Oh, nice.
So... I'm assuming most of you came from listening to the show, so hello.
Excellent.
Yeah, and you know, with some of those, it was a matter of I'm this guy's got an Xbox One logo. He probably sent me a friend request on Xbox One, and I didn't see it until I turned my 360 back on, because it wasn't like, hey, guess what, you got a new friend request. It was just kind of like I would have to have gone looking
for
it.
Yeah, the Xbox One doesn't give you any of those kind of notifications.
Yeah.
Also, I wanted to add to the GPU thing. I did read a little more details on that. Apparently, the system reserves so much graphic memory to certain aspects. You know, so much has to be maintained for the dashboard, especially because of the constant, you know, back and forth that it can do. So uh-huh. much has to be reserved for the Kinect. Because obviously it can, you know, see you and everything in full 1080 or whatever, full HD. And so they're going to tweak how much memory is reserved for what, and they're going to, I think, drastically reduce the amount that the Kinect is, you know, reserved at all times when it's not needing it. Because I think as much as, you know, 8, I don't know. I don't remember the numbers. Like 8 megabytes of something for the GPU was always on reserve for the Kinect 100% of the time. And they're going to try to tweak that to where when things aren't necessarily, you know, the Kinect isn't necessarily needing that, then it will free it up for the game's real-time GPU performance.
Well, it's good that they're doing it now.
Right.
Because these systems are, by the end of their life cycles, they're only going to be taxed the way their previous incarnations were. And 8 megabytes doesn't seem like a lot, but in 5 years, when you're trying to crank every single little bit you can out of it, that's where that type of stuff can make the difference. So, yeah, in 5 years when all of our Kinects are boxed away because we never use them.
Exactly.
Right. So, white Xbox One to be released, sold sometime this fall?
Yeah. Kind of cool. Actually, not kind of, very cool.
I do like my white electronics.
And I don't know if you saw the one that they auctioned off, but it was like a nice mix of white, like primarily white, but splashed black, you know, and it made it look really cool.
Mm. I still want to get that white Titanfall controller.
I pre-ordered one. Yeah.
You did?
After Good you man. Told me about it, and I was like, I was hoeing and humming about it, and I was like, yeah. I actually, what you said about wanting to kind of preserve your day one edition controller, that's what finally I was like, yeah, because I've been thinking about that too.
Every time a kid throws himself or herself onto my couch and my controller gets knocked off of the arm of the couch and falls to the floor.
You cringe?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I lost a 360 controller that way, so it happens.
Yep.
All right, cover the next one.
So, Titanfall Beta opens up for PC and Xbox One next month sometime. No specific date yet. Also, no beta for the 360 version.
Now, is this an open beta, or is this like one you'd have to sign up for?
I believe you have to register for it, but registration is not yet open.
Okay. They will have more than enough volunteers.
Oh, for sure.
But that will not stop me from trying to do it,
yep,
as well. So, cool. Making sure we're still recording. Everything's
Hope
good.
Hope we are.
Yep. Episode 2, and perhaps beyond, of Telltale's Wolf Among Us features a character played by Dave Fenoy, Lee from Walking Dead.
Yep. Yeah, cool. Very exciting there. He's also the Hulu Plus guy. Did you know that?
No, I didn't, but I haven't really listened to a lot of Hulu Plus stuff.
Have you ever, you know, watched Hulu or Hulu Plus or whatever?
No.
Well, obviously it's pretty close to exactly like Netflix. But on top of your subscription fee or whatever per month, they also have ads. Not like your traditional commercials, maybe like 20-second ads, you know, maybe twice throughout the show you're watching. Uh-huh. And he always introduces the ads, like, this program has been brought to you by Chevrolet.
He's the voice of Rex.
Rex.
From Mass Effect.
Oh. Yeah, Shepard. Dave Fenoy he's in a lot of stuff. He's a good voice actor.
That's cool. He was also played a character in StarCraft II. Like you mentioned, Lee from The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Man, voice of Rex. That's pretty cool. Alright, this next one makes me mad.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
King, the makers of Candy Crush Saga, have somehow managed to copyright the word candy, which was approved throughout the appropriate legal channels. This show will now send its 5 cents to King for the use of the word.
Can you believe that? Like, how is that even...
Suck my candy, King.
How is that even legal? I don't get it. Only in America.
I think they were trying to copyright Saga as well. Because they were trying to get money out of the Banner Saga.
Oh my god.
Let me see if there's Banner Saga. I don't want to just be throwing out wild accusations that I heard. Banner Saga legal. Let me see if that brings it up. Candy Crush Saga tries to crush the Banner Saga. Continue to cite. Here it is. Courtesy of Forbes. This is the one that's really... So not only did they try to copyright Candy, they're trying to copyright Saga.
That is so
And
ridiculous.
They're going after Banner Saga for using that name. And where this becomes kind of malicious is the fact that King is this huge company that has made a bunch of money off of Candy Crush, and the guys that made Banner Saga are a small indie team. So Stoic is the name of them. So even if Stoic wins, they lose because of the sheer amount of lawyers and legal fees that they're going to have to pay.
That's shitty.
Yeah, it is.
That's so crappy, especially because, you know, 2 years ago, nobody heard of King either, and they, you know, they got a hit little indie title or mobile title, Candy Crush, and now they're millionaires.
Yeah.
Wait, hold on. This article says that Candy Crush makes $1 million a day in revenue. Oh my god.
Well, they can take over the role as villains that EA so often had.
Oh, pretty soon EA will buy them, and then they'll solve itself.
King, in an attempt to stave off copycat developers, has taken steps to prevent Stoic from using Saga in their game title. This is peculiar for many reasons, including the fact that the word originates from an Old Norse word meaning narrative. That any company should claim the rights to an ancient noun would be mildly hilarious if it didn't have real legal implications for a small studio like Stoic, who may not ever be able to trademark their own game's name.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. King can easily bankroll a legal fight against a tiny indie studio. However absurd this trademark fight may be, Stoic simply can't afford to go toe-to-toe without going bankrupt in the process.
That sucks so bad for them. I want to buy that Banner Saga just because of this now.
I want to buy it. Everything I hear about that game, it just makes me want to buy it even more. Just got to wait for payday to roll around. Sly Cooper CG animated movie announced.
Yep. I think John tweeted about that today.
Yeah, he said he'd go see it. Might be interesting. Depends on who makes it. Some animators I like more than others. So Google sells its Motorola mobile division to Lenovo. That's weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is weird.
Did you hear that? What was it? Yahoo bought AOL, or AOL bought Yahoo? One of those. They're combining or something.
I didn't know AOL was still a thing.
Yeah, it's like, really, the internet provider I used in the 90s to go to the search engine that I used in the 90s? They're going to combine forces?
With our powers combined.
We can still be the T-Mobile of the internet. Jesus. So, Google sells its Motorola mobile division to Lenovo.
Which, they make computers, right? Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it's just they're trying to... Maybe it's got implications for tablets or something.
Could be.
I don't know. Users will not be required to have PlayStation Plus to play Elder Scrolls Online on PS4. No word on Xbox One version fees.
So that's good for them, except I was thinking about this. You'd have to be crazy to not have PlayStation Plus if you're... If you're heavy into, you know, PS3, Vita, and PS4.
Yeah, if... Now, we focus on budget. We try to, anyway, on the show. We picked the wrong time to start a budget-themed show with new consoles coming out, right around episode 4 or 5 or whatever it was. But, realistically, if I was... broke, and had the resources to buy one system and one system alone, it would be a PS4 with PlayStation Plus. Because that's $50, that's $10 cheaper than the price of a new game, and you get all those, you get free games. It's one of those, it's one of those things where they had to sweeten the pot over Xbox Live, because with Xbox, everyone was just used to, you know, paying the $50 live fee. It was just one of those things that you just grew to budget. But they had to offer free games, and it really is, it's a killer deal. And for anyone who is budget focused, it's totally worth the money to do so. So kind of a moot point in my opinion, but good to know.
Huh.
My thoughts.
So,
and a new,
They're supposed to reveal the new PlayStation Vita Slim model tomorrow for the States, which I believe it's already out in Japan.
Now, this is the one that has, like, the LCD screen or something, as opposed
to... Yeah,
and
I don't think it has a back touch screen, either.
Oh, back touch. Truly the Wii U gamepad of the Vita.
I mean, I use it... They use it in the game called Little Deviants that I have for my Vita, which was actually surprisingly innovative. It was kind of challenging to figure out how to use that.
And it's a feature in Tearaway as well. So, but then you get instances like Uncharted where it was just a, hey, we're going to put this in just to show it off.
Right.
So, interesting. And you cover the next one because I don't even know what it is.
Oh, so beta invites have gone out. A lot of people are reporting, getting emails from Sony. Beta invites are out for the PlayStation Now, which is, of course, the PlayStation/Gaikai streaming game service.
Oh, okay. My first thought was like, is this the sequel?
No.
Okay.
So.
Now I remember.
PlayStation Now, you remember?
That's why it's called Now. Now I remember. Now I remember. You did promise that, didn't you?
So, also kind of exciting, honestly. It sounds like a good time to be a PlayStation 4, adopter.
Yeah.
I just wonder what kind of bandwidth. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, I don't monitor my monthly bandwidth on my cable internet bill or anything, but I would have to imagine streaming, you know, when you binge watch a show on Netflix like my wife and I are doing right now, and it's in HD, and, you know, how much, you know, bandwidth you use in a month on your, you know, cable bill, as opposed to how much streaming, how much data streaming a PlayStation 3 title like The Last of Us is going to, is what that's going to do to your, you know, bandwidth.
Yeah. I don't know. It's going to take a crap in its mouth and make it cry. I don't know.
So that's about it for news. Isn't that enough? You know? I mean, geez.
Yeah, new releases. Yeah. We were mistaken. Tomb Raider actually came out the 28th. The definitive edition.
Oh, that only came out yesterday.
Huh. Yep. Broken Age, Act 1, which was the Double Fine Kickstarter, came out yesterday as well. And today, The Castle Doctrine, which we were talking about last week.
Right. Yep.
And on the 30th, which is tomorrow of our recording, Octodad is coming out.
That game, I've only seen a couple screenshots for it, and it looked kind of weird.
It looks very weird, but in a good way.
Yeah, in a good way, for sure. So, here, have you seen this? I'll link it in the Skype chat.
Let me see.
It's not really video game related at all, but...
Huh. So there's going to be a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles
movie? Yeah, guess who's heading that off?
Joss Whedon?
No, way worse. Think way worse.
Uwe Boll?
Michael Bay.
Oh, no. No.
The Shredder looks so sinister, though.
He does look pretty cool.
Yep. Michael Bay to ruin my childhood for a second time.
Again, yeah. I mean, why do we have to end the show on that? We gotta end the show on something good.
Boobies. There, that's good.
Very much so. We are approaching new games at this point. I mentioned a couple, but it has been kind of dry. But we're coming up on... Wow, good lord. Another Final Fantasy 13 in February. Where does it start to get good here? There's a new Earth Defense Force coming out in February.
Wait, what Castlevania Lords what list are you looking at?
Here you go.
I want to follow.
Copy. Skype.
Paste. Send. Boom.
There it goes.
All right. Excellent.
Thief is coming out at the end of February, which I guess everyone was really excited about, and then everyone got really unexcited about it.
Oh, why is that?
And I guess it looked and played like crap, but people have been playing it again, and it's much improved, so there's hope for it yet. Which I have hope for it too, being such a huge fan of Dishonored.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of chatter about it, a lot of internet buzz.
The one thing, at least with this list that I'm looking at, that kind of makes me sad is I don't see a whole lot of downloadable Xbox One games.
Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare, February 18th.
Yeah.
I'll probably pick that up.
Starting to pick up.
Dude, Tomba 2 on PS1 Classics? Oh my gosh.
Original Ninja Gaiden on the Wii U, if you hate yourself.
You hate yourself.
Those are fun games, but my god. I saw a speedrun. A guy beat the original Ninja Gaiden. Okay, so have you heard of Summer Games Done Quickly?
Uh-uh.
They had this streaming what's the word I'm looking for? They had a few-day-long streaming event where the money... They do it once or twice a year, and this past time all the money went to Doctors Without Borders, where they just raise money for charity. And all the clips of it are up on YouTube. You just type in Summer Games Done Quickly, and it'll bring up this whole list of all these runs that they've done, all the different versions. Guy beat the original Ninja Gaiden in 17 minutes without killing anyone but the bosses. Wow. It was the most insane thing I've ever seen. As a kid, I beat my head against that game for years because it's one of the most notoriously difficult games ever. But, I mean, it was just like, and then you go here and you let this guy hit you and it boosts you up over here and makes that jump easier. And it's just like, holy crap. Mm-hmm. 17 minutes to beat that game. It was really impressive. And then that's what got me into the rabbit hole of Dark Souls speedruns and stuff.
Nice. So. Bravely Default's coming out February 7th for the 3DS. It's a Square Enix RPG.
Yeah, it's got that good artwork to it, too. Mm-hmm. I love that style.
And then Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, 2021.
Yeah, so there's some stuff coming. Definitely more than we've seen, so. Yeah, emails. Got one from Maddie. Hi, Chris and Matt. Glad to hear Chris is tackling some more iOS games. I've been playing on the iPhone for 3 years now. Not much, but some amount. One game series has impressed me above all other games. That would be Chaos Rings by Square. It's basically Final Fantasy, but built for iOS only. The series consists of three games. Chaos Rings, published 2010. Chaos Rings Omega, published 2011, which is a prequel. And then Chaos Rings 2, published 2012. The art is amazing on these games, and art direction is made by Yusuke Naora, who was in charge of games like Final Fantasy VII and VIII. The soundtrack on these games is also top class. Actually, these soundtracks are the first game soundtracks I have ever purchased from iTunes. Wow. That's a pretty good endorsement. And Final Fantasy has had some excellent soundtracks.
Oh, yeah. Top notch.
Yep, the game Chaos Rings is $8 approximate, you know, U.S. dollars. Maddie's from Finland. If anyone of you wants to give the game a go, I can even buy a copy for either one of you or pay 50% for each. He really wants us to play this, yeah. And I want to play this game. What scares me is a lot of the game recommendations I'm getting are for RPGs. Mm-hmm. Which is like, okay, but that's a lot of investment. I do definitely want to check these out. I went so far as to looking at them on the App Store, and they do. They look fabulous. And once Payday rolls around, I need to pick it up. I also need to pick up a RPG for the Vita that another listener recommended. So, but I've been RPGing it with football lately.
Now, see, I took notice of these games ever since I've had an iPhone, which I got an iPhone when the iPhone 4 came out, the original 4. And right, I guess for the most part, I would say I've always kept an eye on these and been interested, but they were always in one of those zones where when they first came out, I mean, he mentions that the first Chaos Rings now is $8, but these are always those games since they came out by Square Enix that they were, you know, $15.99 or something when they come out. And mm-hmm. I just could never put myself to, you know, pay that much for a game like that, especially an RPG type game that I don't know that I would be able to just consistently dedicate time to on my iPhone, I guess.
Yeah, and I came at it from the opposite point because I came from Android to iPhone, and so my initial thought had always been, why would I ever pay for a game? I can get games for free. So I just never really played games. And then why am I drawing a blank? Infinity Blade. Infinity Blade changed my mind about mm-hmm. that. And so it's just been a matter of, you know, and I played games on my iPad too. I talked about The Room and how much fun that was. And I think these games, you know, they look to the quality where it's like, I definitely do want to play it on an iPad and just see how gorgeous it looks. So, because it still blows my mind when you... I booted up Infinity Blade 2 on my iPad because it'll actually play it versus my iPhone, which it's like, hell no. Mm. And that game even is a few years old. It's just like, my God, I can't believe this is a mobile game. It's just gorgeous. So it's nice to see it can be done, and it's nice to have that option.
It's definitely impressive seeing where mobile games, you know, where what they can do pretty much. You know, you see mobile games that have, you know, like Chaos Rings, or, you know, they've, you know, remade the Final Fantasies and the Infinity Blades. You know, you're approaching PlayStation 2 type graphics on a mobile device. Sometimes,
yeah,
even
and I would say
that.
Surpassing
yeah,
it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, let me see if you can find it on YouTube, because if you haven't seen it yet, anyone listening out there, The Room iOS, there it is. Yeah, go to YouTube and type in The Room iOS and just look at this game. And it's just beautiful. It's the one I picked up for, I think it was 99 cents on my iPad. And it's got that perfect, because you're turning knobs and turning keys and winding stuff. It's tactile and just gorgeous to look at, and so it can be done. And I think that everyone's concern a few years ago was, it's like, oh, you know, these mobile games are gonna, you know, as much of a, you know, doom and gloom prophet as it was, oh, they're gonna destroy modern console gaming, they're gonna destroy PC gaming. It's like, they haven't. They've come into their own as these types of games that they're just really exploring their own ground.
This game reminds me of Myst.
Yeah, in some ways it's like Myst. It's a little creepier. It's kind of got like that Cthulhu mythology vibe going to it. But, I mean, there's just something so satisfying about, you know, it's like the next step is I need to put this key into the lock and turn it. And then you move the key from your inventory with your finger over to the lock, and then you make a clockwise circle with your finger and it turns the key. There's just something so satisfying about that.
So,
in a way I never would have expected.
Real quick, I think I know the answer to this, but do you have an Apple TV?
No.
So, with an Apple TV, I don't know if you know what it is, but It's basically like, you know, have you heard of the Roku? Yeah, yes. It's basically like that, but, you know, Apple's rendition of it. You know, in addition to being able to watch Netflix or YouTube or ESPN app or, you know, various things, you can stream anything in your Apple account or library from your iTunes. As long as you have your computer on with iTunes loaded up, you can stream anything from iTunes on your computer to the Apple TV, which will be displayed on your big TV. Also, you can stream things from your phone, including, it has a mirror mode where, like the other day, I was playing Plants vs. Zombies 2, and I turned on my Apple TV and turned on mirror mode or whatever, and it basically projects anything you're doing on your phone onto your TV. And so you can basically play games on your big TV. You can play iOS games on your TV.
That's crazy.
It's really cool. So I could see if I ever got into, you know, an RPG game like Chaos Rings, or I'd probably go that route. Go to the TV.
All right. Well, I think we've ended on a much more positive note.
Yeah.
I think this is a good spot end it.
Yeah, we're an hour and a half in. It's fairly standard.
Yeah. Playingforcheeps@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter @playing4cheeps. You can find us individually on Twitter. I'm @CMPlummer.
@Matuna.
You can find us on Xbox Live. I'm RockBase.
Matuna.
And on PlayStation Network, I am Decepticle_X.
Matuna Helper.
Yep. That's all of it.
Excellent.
That's the show.
That's my show.
So until it's a show. Until next week, my name's Chris.
This is Matt.
And this is Playing for Cheeps.
Word.
Word.